be absent.
Okay, we'll bring the meeting of the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee to order and start out with a roll call.
Cornish?
Here.
Woodard? Mullery? Gothier? Grunhagen?
Here.
Hilty? Johnson? Kelly?
Here.
Kiefer?
Here.
Kreisel? Leidiger? Mariani? McDonald?
Here.
Moran?
Here.
Nornis?
Here.
Slocum?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Representative Slocum, would you like to move the minutes for April 12th?
So moved.
All right. Representative Slocum moves the minutes for April 12th. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Today, we will start out our meeting with Representative Kiffmeyer, House File 721. And where's this going? Chair will move House File 721, recommended to pass and be put on the general register. Representative Kiffmeyer, you'd like to go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for your time. And to hear the bill today, House File 721. Mr. Chairman, this bill, in its simplest form, is to make sure we foster legitimate use and stop any abuse. So the Section 1 is about legitimate use, and all it does is strike four words on the driver's side. And for testimony to that particular section of the bill, Mr. Chairman, I have Mr. Krinke here, who is a person who has familiar knowledge with this and also has an example for you to see of what this means. And I also have some handouts as well, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Sir, if you'd like to go ahead and...
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Al Krinke. I'm from Rogers. My son Tom from Houston, Minnesota, and I own a small inventing company. My wife and my daughter-in-law both have MS and the Disabled Person Certificates. We are aware of their benefits and their problems. On a windy day, my wife's tag flew out the window. As I retrieved it from under a car, I thought, Patty could not do this. I called Tom and said, I've got an idea for another invention. The problems we tried to solve, today's mirrors in our electronic center, and the hooks do not always fit over the wires. Number two, display the certificate close to the mirror. Number three, what do you do with a certificate when it's not hanging from the mirror? Number four, make it easy to use. Number five, make it inexpensive. We designed a holder, received a patent, and we built a mold. We contact all the states and provinces, most receptive, especially New York plus California and Florida. We were shocked when Minnesota notified us, you are not in compliance because the holder is not on the driver's side of the dash. This provision was added with good intentions, but in practice, it is the worst location. The certificate creates a reflection on the windshield directly in front of the driver. Also, from this location, they fly across the dash, out the door, out the window, on the floor, and under the seat, and they get lost. This is why people drive with them hanging illegally from their mirror. A holder can save the state money by reducing certificate replacements while providing one less frustration for people that have an extremely frustrating life. When tipped up, they can be easily seen by police and citizens in front or rear. While driving, they lay security on the dash and provide an unobstructed view. I contacted Representative Kiffmeyer because our certificate holders are made in Becker and assembled and shipped from Options Incorporated, a disabled persons company in Big Lake. I support this entire bill, and I ask you remove on the driver's side from the Minnesota law. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Krinke also brought with me today some handouts that kind of show what happens to a certificate when it gets blown around, and these are found. And so members can take a look at that. This is also an example. Again, this is one product. There may be others of what they look like when they are properly centered in the dash. This is what it looks like when it's hanging from a rearview mirror and how it obstructs the view. And this gives just an example of why this is an issue and how important it is to solve this. And this is a photo that gives an example of what it is like when it is conveniently displayed. And again, for people with disabilities, these are the sorts of things that really matter. And I commend Mr. Krinke for his diligence and the fact that he wants to be compliant with the law. and seeking that to be sure that he is. And so I think we can assist him in that and assist other people with disabilities as well. And this is also just a physical example of what they look like and how they can stand on the dash. That's just an example. There may be other companies as well, but this is the person who brought this need to my light. If there are any questions on Section 1, Mr. Chairman?
Any question from members? Okay, are you finished basically with your testimony?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm not. That's just Section 1. I thought it would be easier to just do.
Go ahead.
If the page could hand these out for the members to look at. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Chairman, on Section 2 of the bill, has to do, was brought to my attention by the City of Minneapolis, and this has to do with any abuse that is going on with these certificates. As you saw, the macerated certificate, and many times what they do is they come back to the cities to get them reprinted, and they're lost, and then they're stolen, and then they're misused. And so the Section 2, Mr. Chairman, deals with the language here regarding putting in place that when the permit or certificate is expired or is otherwise invalid for more than 90 days, then they would not have the opportunity to have their violation waived. In essence, that's what it means here. And also, to be valid, the certificate or permit must show it is owned by the same person that owned the expired certificate displayed at the time the tag was issued. And again, this is a compliance issue, and I have the City of Minneapolis here with me to testify in regards to other details, Mr. Chairman.
Sounds good. Okay, sir, state your name. And
Mr. Chair, thank you. Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. I'll be brief. We got into this issue a little deeper as we were requested by the Minnesota Council on Persons with Disability, in particular a group in Minneapolis, who asked us to do greater enforcement around disability parking as they were seeing some abuse. And during our course of ramping up our enforcement, we discovered that an awful lot of permits were expired and long expired, you know, 10 months, a year, 2 years, and they were still being used. So we began to write violations for those expired permits. And what we found was there was a state statute that allowed the original permit holder to get any ticket dismissed regardless of how old it was. So we worked with the disability community, and they agreed that a limit of 90 days expired was reasonable, and then we could start writing violations. So the we clarified that ticket could not be dismissed by original permit holder if it was more than 90 days expired. We also can write tickets for those we discover that are permits that are lost or stolen, and allows a process also for surrendering permits. If somebody comes in to dismiss a ticket for an expired permit, if their permit is more than 90 days expired, they have to give it up at the time of the when they're seeking to have the ticket dismissed. This bill has the support of the League of Cities. It has the support of St. Paul. We have the Minnesota Council on Persons with Disabilities, who also support the work we have done here. With me today, but they won't be speaking, but only answering questions, is our Claire Schmidt-Gonzalez, who is our Director of Parking Enforcement, and also an Assistant City Attorney, Heidi Johnson, who works with the prosecution, if we want to talk more about that. But we appreciate Representative Kiffmeyer allowing us to piggyback on her bill and taking care of two issues that seem to be important to our disability community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Questions from members? Any more testimony, Representative Kiffmeyer?
No, Mr. Chairman. DPS has also been worked with them, and they have no objections to this bill. That is it. Mr. Chairman and members, I'd appreciate your vote of support.
Okay, if there are no questions, the Chair will restate the motion of House File 721 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. I don't think there's any opposition out there, is there? No, it doesn't look like it. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith? Yes. Representative Smith, House File 1109. Representative Representative Smith, if you want to go ahead and move your bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd move that the bill be recommended to pass and that be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation.
Okay, Representative Smith, the bill is before us. Go ahead however you would like to proceed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I do have one testifier here, Joan Kopinski, Driver Services Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Department, State of Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, I'm here today to ask you to support House File 1109, which is a technical cleanup bill requested by the Department of Public Safety. 2010, the legislature passed, I think, one vote short in each house, and the governor signed a major and comprehensive law to combat drunk driving and the epidemic of unlicensed drivers in Minnesota. Under the law, Minnesota's driver's license revocation periods were lengthened, but offenders desiring to follow the rules could be legally licensed almost immediately, provided that they agree to have an ignition interlock device installed in their vehicle. By expanding Minnesota's successful ignition interlock program, as many other states have done, the offender can get back on the road sooner and with a legal license. The public is safeguarded because the interlock prevents the car from starting if the driver has been drinking, and the courts are no longer flooded with driving after suspension or revocation citations. The 2010 law is complex. It was given an effective date of July 1, 2011 to allow time for rulemaking and other implementation steps and to catch any fixes that needed to be made prior to the effective date. I'm here today because the Department of Public Safety has found one such cross-reference error in the law that must be corrected in order to enact the legislative intent. In closing, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn the discussion over to Ms. Joan Kopinski, Driver Vehicle Service Division of the Public Safety Department.
Okay, thank you, Representative Smith. And ma'am, go ahead, state your name and title and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joan Kopinski, Driver Services Director, Department of Public Safety. The 2010 DWI ignition interlock legislation was passed to create effective administrative sanctions for impaired driving by creating a path for safe and legal driving for high-risk drivers through the use of ignition interlock. These high-risk drivers include first-time offenders with an alcohol concentration level of 0.16 and repeat DWI offenders. House File 1109 relates specifically to the mandatory revocation periods described in Minnesota Statute 169A.54 for first-time DWI offenders convicted of violating Minnesota Statute 169A.20, whose blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit, 0.16, but less than 0.20. The language is needed to implement DWI legislation regarding driver license sanctions for impaired driving and the use of ignition interlock as prescribed by the 2010 legislature. A provision of the 2010 law was to provide for a one-year revocation period under Minnesota Statute 169A.52, which is the test refusal or test failure revocation periods, in Minnesota Statute 169A.54, which is the DWI convictions and administrative penalties for a first-time offender whose blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit or greater. The current law, however, fails to clearly define revocation periods for those convicted of violating MS 169A.20, whose blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit and less than 0.20. House File 1109 would simply eliminate ambiguity in the law regarding the length of revocation time for first-time DWI offenders and further aligns DWI law. House File 1109 clearly defines a one-year revocation period for a first-time conviction of DWI if the offender's alcohol concentration level is twice the legal limit or greater. The changes to MS 171.306 and MS 171.30 are technical and are needed as a result of the renumbering changes in Minnesota Statute 169A.54, Subdivision 1. By failing to amend 169A.54 to exclude offenders as described, these offenders would likely receive the mandatory revocation period listed in MS 169A.54, Subdivision 1, Clause 1, which is not less than 30 days. This bill will help the department align the revocation periods and the implied consent laws with the conviction and subsequent revocation length.
Okay, thank you very much. And Representative Smith, any more? Should we take questions?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any other testifier.
Okay, members, do you have any questions on this House File 1109? Okay. Seeing no questions, Representative Smith, would you like to restate your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the bill be recommended to pass, that it be referred to the Committee on Transportation.
All right, members, you heard the motion. If there's no comments or questions, yeah, Representative Mullery. What's that? Oh, they should have spoke up by now. No. Anybody else wish to testify on the bill? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for your time.
Members, if we could sit tight, we're going to go get the bill author who is busy in another committee right now.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Gauthier.
I would just like to recognize one of our members' birthday today, Representative Moran. Oh, wish you a happy birthday. And Kate offered to sing.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Are you 21?
Yeah.
Representative Erdo has House File 537 before us. The chair will move House File 537, recommended to pass, and move to the general register. Representative Erdo, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, this is directly from Cheeseburger to Dimmler. So. I think I have an amendment, too. Do you have that?
Did somebody talk to you about the amendment? Is this the amendment?
This is the one that the staff, research staff, thought was necessary.
Thank you. Burkhardt had something to say just about the amendment. Would you rather have the...
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ken Urquhart. I'm with the State Patrol. After reviewing the amendment, I see what Representative Erdahl wants to do here, and he's just cleaning up the language when he changes the Dimmler piece in the 60 zone from 5 miles an hour to 10 miles an hour. So the amendment is fine, as far as we're concerned.
Would you like to move your amendment, Representative Erdahl?
I can't, and not on the committee.
What's that?
I'm not on the committee, so I can't move.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Smith, would you move the Amendment A1?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Amendment A1.
Okay, Representative Smith moves Amendment A1 without objection. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is approved to 537. Representative Erdahl, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Under current law, well, first of all, I'll just start off by saying this. This is a bill that has come up several times over the years. We're trying to get some consistency in speed limits. It has passed the House, I believe, in 2007, maybe 2008. Representative Heidgerken had it. I have passed it off the House twice since. Each time, I believe, averaging about 110 votes. Now, under current law, if one is driving in a posted 55-mile-an-hour speed zone and drives 65, they may be stopped, ticketed, and fined. But it doesn't go on their driving record. Now, this bill, again, which is passed with good majorities with both parties in power, applies the same conditions for a speed limit posted at 60 miles an hour, which is rated a safer route. Now, traffic speed is established by engineers at 85% of the traffic flow speed. Former Commissioner Campion cited a U of M study, reported that the number of vehicles traveling over 70 miles an hour decreased by 29% in rural highways posted at 60. Now, let me emphasize this is an important point. I'm not trying to increase speed or speeding. My position is backed by various studies, is that expanding the Dimmler Amendment does not increase speed. And I'm not changing the penalty either. People are already driving at speeds at which they are comfortable. For example, and I ask you to listen to this carefully, a New York State speed limit on their thruway was 55 miles an hour. The average speed on that 55 mile an hour posted thruway was 68 miles an hour. And so they changed the speed limit on the thruway to 65. And then they tested again, and the average speed limit was 68. Didn't change. Just changing the speed limit didn't change the speed. People drive at the speed at which they are comfortable. The majority of drivers will not go faster than what they feel is reasonable and safe, no matter what the speed limit. I guarantee you, I drive in here on Highway 12 from Litchfield, and if the speed limit was 85 on Highway 12, I would still drive the rate that I drive, just a mile or two above the speed limit, or right at it most of the time.
That's going on record.
Actually, right at the speed limit. A Federal Highway Administration report said that motorists intuitively make reasonable decisions when selecting the speed in which you travel. Think about when you drive. I think most people aren't even conscious when they exceed a speed limit. But if you do make a conscious decision, I believe the deterrent, what most people are concerned about, and certainly a young driver, is the immediate impact of that $140 speeding ticket that you're going to have to pay within a month. You're not thinking about, oh, what happens in 6 months to a year when it goes on my record and is reflected. The deterrent to speed is the fine that you're going to pay. You're not thinking about, ooh, if I go faster, it'll go on my driving record. Remember, if you speed, you are still breaking the law, and you may be punished. This simply gives a break on driving records. It doesn't change state penalties or increase driver's speed. Interestingly, federal and state studies show that the drivers most likely to get into accidents in traffic are those traveling significantly below the average speed. This is from the Institute of Transportation Engineers study. In 2002, the average speed on a Minnesota rural two-lane, two-way, 55-mile-an-hour posted highway was 64.8. On a rural 65 posted, it was 73.2. So you may be told that this provision will increase speed in accidents. Other factors may do that, but not changing the speed violation reporting procedures. Studies do not support that contention. After the Dimmler Amendment went into effect in 1986, there was little, if any, change in the decade following. Drivers simply kept driving the speed at which they were comfortable. They will do the same if the Dimmler provision is extended to 70 on a posted 60-mile-an-hour road.
Okay. Representative Bertold, we have another testifier, but is there any questions so far? Representative Mulroy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'll note that Representative Erdahl must have gotten legal counsel, or else how carefully he worded his going over the speed limit, possibly, but so it couldn't be used as an admission. But a question.
Representative Mulroy, do you know any good lawyers if I need one?
No. Why are you just doing it for the one? In other words, if it's 60, why not 65? Which aren't there a lot of highways in Minnesota that are 65? And I've actually been asked by cops why it doesn't apply to 45 speed limit, which they tell me they'd like. So just wondering why you're narrowing it down when it would make sense, it seems like, for those other ones.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mullery, I guess I'm trying to take it one speed limit at a time. And 60, we have a lot of rural roads in Minnesota posted 60. I'm not trying to do federal interstates here either. What I'm trying to, mainly I'm addressing rural Minnesota roads posted 60. I mean, there are some in the Twin Cities as well. Mm-hmm. But for me, from what I've heard from people, since I live in rural Minnesota, that's what I was dealing with.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, yes, there's a few, the outer ones in the Twin Cities are 60. I guess I would just think that if we're talking about safety, driving 65 on a interstate freeway would be a lot safer than driving whatever 70 on that would be safer than driving 65 or 70 on a, or 65 on a rural two-lane highway or something like that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riddle.
And Representative Mullery, I kind of like the way you're going with this. And, I'd be willing to, today I would like to just stay where we are, but we have another stop or two, and, consider the opinions that you're bringing up.
Well, I, for one, am glad you're leaving it like it is. Representative Nornes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just not really a question, but, I'm not sure how many people get pulled over after driving on an interstate and then pull over and begin driving on a rural road, how hard it is to go less than 70, but that's another issue. But just an observation, I think most of the drivers that I encounter where I drive and I get passed by most people, I'm driving the speed limit, but there's a certain mindset that people want to be in front. If we can somehow change that, if you can amend that to your bill, that you must be second instead of first, I think that would solve a lot of problems.
Mr. Chairman, there are all kinds of things that I can say, but I'm not going to.
Okay. All right. No more questions. There's a testifier, I guess, to testify in opposition.
You'd be nice.
I'm always nice.
Go ahead and state your name and title and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Cassandra Isaacson. I'm an assistant state traffic engineer with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. MnDOT is concerned with this legislation. The Representative Erdahl is correct. The Dimler Amendment went into effect in the time period of the 80s. Since that time, however, there has been something that has changed. Many people remember during the 60s, there was 65 mile per hour speed limits on some of our two-lane rural highways. Those highways were designed and engineered for a 60 mile per hour speed. And what that means when a design speed is established, things like stopping sight distance, how sharp curves are, the grade of hills, the amount of clear zone we have, are all based on a design speed. And that design speed is 60 miles per hour for our two-lane rural highways. During that period of the 60s, when those limits were up, over 1,000 people per year were dying on roads in Minnesota. In the 70s, the national speed limit was instituted. 55 miles per hour was the maximum for all roads. Highway fatalities went down, not only in Minnesota, but nationwide. In recent years, through the decade of the 90s, we saw that the number of Minnesotans dying on roads was staying about the same. And in the early part of the 2000s, we partnered with State Patrol, Department of Public Safety, Department of Health for our Towards Zero Death program, where we're working to reduce fatal and serious injury crashes on highways. And one of the things that we have really looked at in depth are our two-lane highways in the state. That's where a large number of serious and fatal crashes occur. And I'm going to have to look here for my date. In 2005, MnDOT raised the speed limit on 930 miles of two-lane highway. We raised that limit from 55 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour. And we did that in partnership with State Patrol and local law enforcement. We analyzed, we looked at the 85th percentile speeds, that speed at which 85% are traveling at or below. We identified corridors where there was a big difference in how fast people were going. The safest road are those where people are driving fairly close to the same speed. If you think about a residential street, you know, in front of your house, if someone were driving on that road at 70 miles per hour, I think you'd be horrified. By the same token, if you think about an interstate and someone was out there driving 20 miles per hour, again, that person would be unsafe. And so we want drivers to drive as close to the same speed as possible. And so on those two-lane highways that we selected with the 60 mile per hour speed and put the 60 mile per hour speed limit, we also have extraordinary enforcement on those roads. And so we have a comprehensive speed program where we have the engineering component, the enforcement component, and the education component. We have worked very hard to convince the public that the limit is the limit. And we think that this legislation will serve to erode that education component and will result in higher speeds on those roads. And I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions from the committee? Or Representative Grunhagen, or excuse me, Gauthier is first, and then Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, your bill doesn't raise speed limits, does it?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gauthier. I mean, the point is this. What's your name
again?
Ms. Isaacson is right on about 90-95% of what you just said. But the fact is this. My bill does not increase speed. The bill does not increase, it does not increase speed, does not change the penalty. And there is no evidence, no study that MnDOT has done that says that people are going to drive faster simply because there's a reporting change. The studies that I have, and I've commented on three of them here, University of Minnesota, indicate that, again, people drive where they are comfortable. The knowledge that you're not reporting will not change the speed. If it did, if I felt that my bill was going to cause people to drive faster and to have accidents and to kill people, I wouldn't do it.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen.
It's just you're reporting to the, as far as to the insurance company, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you still get the fine. The police officer could still pull you over and write you a ticket. But just the reporting to the insurance company that will increase your insurance accidentally or unintendedly or even intendedly get a ticket when you're going under 10 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, that's correct. All we're trying to do is make some consistency here. It's in the 55 posted. There have been a decrease, lots of factors that Ms. Isaacson pointed out. But since 1986, we've got fewer fatalities in our roads after the Dimmler. I'm not implying a cause and effect at all, but.
Representative Grunhagen.
Chair, so all you're doing, you're just, the punitive ticket is still there. It's just the reporting to the insurance company, which is part of the punitive system, is you're alleviating that if you're speeding under 10 miles an hour over the posted speed of 50 miles an hour, correct?
Right, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, essentially the change here is between 65 and 70. Because in a 55 right now, yeah. It's up to 65.
It's posted at 60.
Right. So we're just looking at those five miles an hour.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I believe someone is here from the Department of Public Safety. She wasn't on the list to speak a little bit about the driver behavior components
right.
of this change.
If you want to come up, please, and state your name and title, and go ahead with your testimony.
Be nice.
Heard. What happened?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Donna Berger. I'm with the Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety.
Okay, go ahead. Appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, we do have concerns with the safety concerns with this bill. As we know, speed is the greatest crash factor for younger drivers and those that are already at higher risk because of tendency to drive aggressively. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, a crash on the road with a speed limit of 65 miles per hour or greater is more than twice as likely to result in a fatality than a crash on a road with a speed limit of 45 or 50 miles per hour. Speeding affects both the probability of a crash and the severity of injuries produced by a crash. And I'll be brief, but just from the Minnesota Random Telephone Survey that was just completed in 2010, it states that 40% believe that you can drive up to 10 miles per hour over the speed limit without being stopped. So our concern is that this legislation just reinforces the idea that it's okay to speed. And my final point is, if these tickets do not appear on the driving record, it has the potential to mask the problem of repeat offenders. These are the high-risk drivers that tend to be in serious crashes, which could have deadly consequences on our roads. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The only part, I guess, I would find contradictory to that is that the real speeders seem to really speed. If you get a habitual violator, it seems like you keep catching them. They're way up there in the miles an hour. They don't pay much attention to the 5 or 7 or 8. They're really humming down the road. And thank you for your testimony. I would normally would have concerns about a bill like this, but since it's passed the floor and it seems to be real popular at the legislature already, and law enforcement hasn't made a concentrated effort to see me with their worries about it, I tend to think it's okay. But thank you much for your testimony. Representative Mueller, do you have a question for the testifier?
Mr. Chair, just with regard to law enforcement, I don't talk to State Patrol about it, but talking to regular cops, they agree with this type of thing very strongly. And I forget your name, but anyhow, the question is, do you feel that your statements apply also to the issue of if it was over 65 speed limit on a interstate?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you asking if our safety concerns would be
right,
the same? I would say yes, they would.
Okay. Any more testimony, Representative Erdahl? Let's see. This is House file. Any more testimony from the crowd? Representative Smith, could you move House file 537 then to General Register?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the House file 537 as amended be recommended to pass, be sent to the General Register.
Okay, you heard the motion. Members, any comments or questions? Representative Mulroy?
Thank you. Just one real quick comment. Seems like the strongest opposition to Representative Erdahl's bill comes from the fact insurance companies won't make as much money.
All right. All of them in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to Delano and speed every day.
Hey, is there any questions from the members? If not, again, happy birthday, Representative Martin.
Thank you.
And meeting adjourned.